What if you could be doing something smarter with your money that creates income now? If you're wanting to get ahead financially and enjoy greater freedom of choice, if you want a comfortable retirement and you know you'll have more choices if you can do more with your money now. If you've wondered who else is creating ways to make their money work for them, and you want actionable ideas with honest pros and cons and no fluff, welcome to the Richer Geek Podcast. We're here helping people find creative ways to build wealth and financial freedom. I'm Mike Stoller, and in this podcast, you'll hear from others who are already doing these things and learn how you can too. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Richer Geek Podcast. We actually have a geek on board this week. He's 18 years as a software engineer, architect, technical consultant, everything that we do. He pivoted his IT career to acquiring online software SaaS companies a decade ago. He hasn't looked back. And today he's educating software developers and IT professionals on how to use digital acquisitions as their next career evolution. And he's been featured multiple of media outlets, including FE International, Indie Hackers, and Empire Flippers. Let's welcome Michael Frew. How you doing?
Good. Well, that's a great intro. Thank you so much for that.
you're welcome.
It's great to be here and get the opportunity to talk to your listeners and everything. And I've got a few books on my bookshelf behind me from your episodes that I bought from some of the people that have been on here. So thanks again for having me.
Wonderful. We really appreciate that. And so let's talk about Michael Frew. Give us, who are you? What do you do?
Right. So probably much like your audience, I was in your standard corporate engineering path. And I did, as you said, about 18 years kind of jumping from junior developer all the way up to kind of the senior consultant and moving around with quite a few companies. Took a bit of a sabbatical when I was getting burned out. And probably like a lot of your audience, we get burned out quite a bit. There can be some challenges to whether the mission is fulfilling, and especially you get on some of those projects where you're not quite sure why you're doing it. So went through a few of those quarter life crises. And on one of them, and I wish I could tell you the genius moment, but I started looking at trying to acquire a business instead of trying to start one. I think that's probably something else I have in common quite a bit with your audience, that we all are kind of trying to start our side hustle. And we're looking to do a side hustle in something we know, which is engineering. It's doing projects. Usually it's kind of fun stuff. You know, I bet a ton of us just jumped onto an AI side project just because that came out. And the challenge, of course, is getting traction and getting that first customer that's not your family and friends and getting the marketing. And a lot of us don't like setting up marketing funnels. So somewhere in there, after my dozens and dozens of failures, I started looking at acquiring businesses. And so that was roughly a decade ago. And the market wasn't as mature back then, a little more of the Wild West. And so kind of figured it out on my own. And so now, you know, fast forward a decade, I've acquired a few six and seven figure software companies. And in the end, I'm running the same projects that your listeners are running. It's just, it's all for me. I get to decide when or if we even do meetings. I decide what direction we get to go. I get to talk to other engineers every day, which is pretty rewarding. So it's been a fantastic transition where I went from a corporate lifestyle where I took everything I learned from there, and now I can apply it to my own company without going through that stage where you're trying to start a business and you're going to have that 99.9% failure rate.
Yeah. And it's, and get this, you probably don't now have the suits telling you, hey, and by the way, this project needs to be done, and they're just making up a date. You know? And as an engineer and a programmer, you're like going, you got to be kidding me. So that's something that you can now determine yourself as more of a realistic time frames on all your projects.
I couldn't agree more. I try and look at working with the team that works with me from the point of view of when I used to be the young junior engineer. And we all tell ourselves, you know, if I ever manage anybody, I'm not doing it this way. I'm not making them hit these deadlines. I understand everything takes 2 to 3 times as long. And so I try and at least manage my team that way. Hopefully they see some of that benefit. But you're right, setting your own deadlines and being able to refuse projects that you aren't interested in, where my little niche is, if, and we've had this happen, if a large Fortune 50 company comes to us and says, hey, you know, we want you to do this for us and we'll pay you a ton of money, we can actually say no, because it's going to affect my lifestyle. I can't just go on vacation whenever I want. And to be able to refuse projects is pretty amazing.
You know, that's good. And the listeners probably asking us, like, when did you get to the point and how did you get to the point where the lifestyle is more important than startup? Or it's like, man, we need to grow first, then the lifestyle comes. When did you make that decision? When were you able to?
You know, one of the good things about the acquisition market is you kind of get to decide how quickly that happens. So you can look at a smaller business, and a lot of people that I've spoken with, you know, should I start with something that's kind of a small 4 or 5 figure business to test it out? So when you're doing that, you know, you can't quickly switch to the lifestyle that you want because you're not making enough income. But if you look at acquiring something larger that's got a lot more of, let's say, kind of free time, free cash, although it's more complicated, you're allowed to hire people, hire a team, and more quickly maybe move to that lifestyle where you're outside of the business and you're deciding your own schedule, and then the business has its schedule as well. So to me, it seems like the way you can do that is by targeting kind of an acquisition size that gives you that net income where either you run it like I do, I love being an owner operator, or you can be an owner and have your team underneath you.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about acquiring some type of a business. How do you, where do you find them? You know, right. I can't go to the classifieds and say, hey, here's a SaaS company that I'm going to buy, and what are, part two is, what are some of the things you look for besides, you know, this is your strong point, this is your unique ability, and that business works with it, but what are some of the things, due diligence type things that you work also?
Those are the two best questions, and actually probably the first two questions that people ask me. And so I always kind of talk of the big challenge of awareness that this is out there. Now that I've been in this so long, I'm always stunned to find that engineers don't and developers haven't heard of doing this. So even just finding and being aware that this exists is kind of step one. And like you said, so how do I find if I'm suitable? What kind of a niche would I work in? And, you know, I go through on one of my videos, like, how can we take what we've been good at, whether it's B2B sales or whether we're kind of front end developing, what kind of businesses, at least that are online, would be suitable for me? And then where do we find them? So as I mentioned earlier, this market has matured quite a bit. We now have brokers that are specializing only in online businesses, as well as brokers that are breaking out into niches like just software acquisitions or just e-commerce FBA acquisitions. So there's a list of brokers that I can go through with your listeners at any time that do help you with that. There's also people have found off-market deals where someone will approach me just because, hey, if you're running this business, my side project that I just don't have time for might work out. So just kind of keeping your inner network flowing as well. And then the next challenge, of course, is how do I finance this? How do I go through that whole process of due diligence, going through the closing? What paperwork does it require? So it's a bit of a long process, and I've made kind of my own 10-step framework out of that. And it's something that I follow all the time, each time.
Only e-commerce. You know, you don't want to have some brick and mortar out in California or Texas or wherever. You look at this e-commerce business and it says that, okay, it makes $500,000. Okay, I'm just throwing a number out there.
It's a good number.
And, you know, for the beginner, what are some of the things you're looking at? Is it worth 4 times gross? Or do you look at it that way? Is it 2.5 times gross like other brick and mortars? What are some of the things that you look at just to make sure this, like, okay, this is immediately no because he's wanting 10 times gross or something like that?
Yep. Yeah. And so one thing that's interesting is each niche is a little bit different on its multiple. And if you think of a parallel of real estate, the different type of family or commercial is going to have different type of multiples as well. So if we take something like a content site, that's probably going to have a bit of a lower multiple than a software SaaS site. And that's all due to the reliability of the revenue, the ease of running the business, and, you know, this whole list of factors. So you're correct if you said, all right, the business makes $500,000 a year. If the multiple is 4 or 5, that's where you think the price should be. So some sellers come in through brokers who help kind of manage their expectations of where they should be in that multiple area. And these multiples change. So we are speaking now in October 2023. I think everyone knows that the last 12 months has seen a massive change in the market with respect to rates. So all that free money that existed at the end of 2022 isn't there anymore. That affects multiples as well. We've switched a little bit to a buyer's market where it used to be a seller's market. And again, more parallels to real estate, but that affects multiples each, whether it's the niche and kind of what your economy is doing and then how healthy the business is. I've acquired a business well above what the standard multiple would be, but because everybody wanted it. So the seller was able to let that rise up. But we knew it was a business that was growing so fast that it, in the end, that multiple would actually come down. You just had to be able to acquire it and run it in the first place.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Now, do you also look at, you want them, this e-commerce site to be open 2 years minimum or three yeah. years minimum, something like that. And then do you yep. look at also, okay, I want at least see so many page views or hits. You know, is that something also you look at?
Absolutely. There's a huge pile of metrics that you can look at. And so it's great to be able to set up your own due diligence standards, and everyone can do this. And I think you're right. 2 years minimum. This is kind of the traffic pattern that I'm looking for. Things that I look at, you know, I'm looking for a tech stack that my team already knows. I'm looking for something that is scalable without adding staff. So if you have a kind of a, I run a couple cloud services where it's kind of a set it and forget it, right? So every 10 customers that comes on, it doesn't mean I need more staff. You know, once they're set up, they're there for life. So you can really set up your own measurements of what you're looking for. Speak to some of the brokers that are on the marketplaces so that they're aware of what you're looking for. And then you spend that time kind of churning through things that are open to try and find that right business that might be a good fit for you. Like I said earlier, you know, somebody that's into B2B sales, boy, there's a lot of businesses that come up that for me, I'm not a salesperson. I don't want that one-to-one interaction. I don't particularly like meetings, you know, so for me, I would turn that over to someone else. There's also, we had mentioned brick and mortar. There's a lot of good online businesses that have a brick and mortar aspect to it. Even let's say scheduling for contractors or roofers, you know, that in the end is a brick and mortar business, but you're running that cloud infrastructure on top. So if you have a little bit of a specialty, maybe that used to be a summer job that you did, you know, and then you find an online business that is running scheduling for that. And you think, man, I would be the perfect person for this. That's what you're really looking for, is that one business where you see it and say, like, this was made for me. Like, my best friend must have built this business, and now I can take it from them and kind of move it to that next level.
How long is this something that you see, you buy an e-commerce site, fix it, grow it? It's a 3-year project, 5-year, or are you looking long? What's kind of your game plan?
Yeah, people do it many ways. Some people do the Warren Buffett buy it and hold. Some people are looking to flip in a couple of years with a, you know, a 2 or 3x gain. Again, you get to choose whatever you want. You're running your own business. Personally, I'm a buy and hold at the moment. One thing that I think a lot of us know about SaaS is it's almost impossible to find the time to sell it when it's growing, because the metrics are so good. It's almost impossible to ever say, well, I don't want all that future money. I'd rather have it all now. So in my world, I've kind of kept them, and I really enjoy running them. But at some point, the portfolio becomes a bit unmanageable, and maybe you would look to sell one of your better ones. But people can set their own time limits. You make your portfolio, you have a team that runs it, and you buy and hold for as long as you like. So you'll find content sites and maybe some e-commerce sites get flipped a little bit more often. That's a little bit more of the goal. And then maybe something like software and SaaS, you might want to hold on to it if it's something that you really enjoy. But again, completely up to you.
And again, everybody, it's Michael Frew, michaelfrew.com. So let's talk about, when people go to michaelfrew.com, what are they going to find? There's some guides, there's some lessons.
Yeah.
Talk to us about your site. What are you doing?
Yeah. Even just the genesis of the site, you know, I'm pretty busy, so I never wrote about what I did, but just bumping into other developers and engineers, and I could tell there was such an appetite for, you know, just help me understand what's going on here. Why, how do I get into this? So I put together a 4-part course of just like the 4 common questions I get every cocktail party. It's honestly, it's the same 4 questions every time. You know, why do people sell successful companies? And there's a disbelief in that. How do you buy a 5-, 6-, 7-figure business? How do you find that suitability, like we spoke about earlier, to be, you know, what makes me such a good buyer? And then, you know, where do I find a niche that matches that skill set? So I try and talk everybody through that as if we're just meeting at a party, and, you know, kind of give you some background to see if that's something you'd like to do. I push out a newsletter as often as I can, trying to give some perspective from the buyer's point of view. Most of the stuff that's out there comes from brokers and marketplaces, and so they help teach you kind of the process, but it's like only listening to real estate agents. They have an agenda. In the real estate world, there's a lot more discussion of the people that are buying the businesses and the landlords. In this world, you don't hear from buyers that much. So I'm trying to bring that out a little bit in the newsletter. And then a third thing, from talking and putting this out, I've been asked to do a portfolio manager for a company called WebStreet. And so that's an opportunity for your listeners where, if they don't have the time, you know, because I'm doing this as a full-time job, but if you want to invest passively in basically this type of business, that's what they do now. And so if you go to their website, which links off mine, if you like, you can look at each portfolio manager and invest in there. And so I think that's very applicable for your audience, because that's a passive way to do what I'm doing without actually doing it full time like I'm doing it.
Let's talk about the time. You know, you're kind of talking about you're doing it full time. The listeners here, they're working their IT jobs. They're hustling. And there's that dream. It's like, okay, I'd love to, but it's too much of a time suck. I don't have time. I already work 80 hours a week or whatever it is. How much of a time do you think it's like, okay, I'm going to go buy something. Talk us through from the beginning to maybe towards getting it stabilized. How much time is that going to take?
Right. That's what makes the acquisition philosophy so fantastic, because a lot of that time suck is in the beginning when you're setting everything up. I could look at it and say, all right, so I'm working 50 hours a week. I got maybe 10 spare hours. So let me find a business that's in a price point where it's going to be about 10 hours. And that could be my side hustle, but I don't have to set it all up and go look for those first customers, right? The marketing's already there and I just go in there and prove it and run it. So the answer to your question, how long does it take? Well, as soon as you acquire it, you're already running. And so you're just looking to acquire something that you can fill in with that free time. For me, because I was on sabbatical, I had the 40 hours, but I've seen a lot of people move in, you know, hey, this is first 10 hours. And then you realize this is exactly what I want to be doing. How do I replace my job, right? And so many ways, either you're trying to build that one or you just start looking for that next acquisition. By doing this acquisition, instead of trying to start it yourself, you can pick those numbers that you want. I got 10 hours. I got this much money. I want to look for a business that doesn't make me do inside sales, you know, and then you go find that perfect business instead of trying to start it yourself.
Yeah. And if they already have the staff in place, you're just the new owner, yep. Right? And it's just, yep. You may do some little tweaks. It's like me buying some hotels. Hopefully I don't have to put too much time and effort. It's just already, it's kind of up and running. And then as I have time, I look at the ADRs, I look at the expenses and things like that and tweak.
Yeah. And just like real estate, like you don't go out there and build the hotel yourself, right? You're already buying a fully functional and operational business. So yeah, on day one, I try not to touch anything, right? I'm observing. And so, you know, you're already running and hopefully, you know, customers don't even know ownership changed unless I want to say like, hey, Michael Frew is running this now. So yeah, being able to step into something that's already moving and has momentum. I always call it buying momentum.
Yeah. You know, that is so important because you can be overwhelming because then most of these people are type A type of personalities and they're like, going, okay, I need to do this. I need to be, it's so important not to micromanage these, right? Just kind of let it happen. And then at what point did you sit there and say, okay, I need to start hiring people because I'm not good at this. I'm not good at that. I need to concentrate on maybe the acquisition parts. For me in the real estate career, I couldn't even afford maybe to hire some other people, but there was one point where I have to afford because I can't grow.
Right. And that's exactly the moment I think it hit me was I was working as much as I wanted to each week, leaving a lot of projects on the side. And I kind of had this self-talk, you know, and I was like, listen, I've plateaued, Michael. I need help to be able to get, I can see the things I need to do, but I can't because I'm messing around with accounting, messing around with my email. I'm answering customer questions all day. You know, I need help with those things. And the second thing I would say is, when is what I'm doing not really adding that much more value than if somebody else was doing it? I'm not a professional bookkeeper. I'm not professional answering for technical service questions. Even if I'm adding a little 20% because of my personality is coming through, you know, really in the end, somebody else maybe should be answering that. And I need to move a little bit farther up the kind of value chain.
Yeah, that's so important because one thing is I hate sales. I don't like people bugging me for things and I don't want to bug people.
You don't want to do it back. Yeah.
I don't want to do it back because it's just not wired in me. So I was like going, well, so what do you do? Gotta find someone
that loves it.
Someone that loves it, that's good at it, then it works. So we've talked about a lot of good things. What are some of the warning signs? Some of the things like, oh my God, I love this business. I want to buy this. What are some of the things that you sit there and say? These are things that you have to kind of caution that you've learned maybe in your experience.
I think there's two things that I've noticed that are pretty common in businesses the size that I look for. One is you have to replace the engineer or the engineering team that is selling the business because they're going to go do something else. So that can be a challenge because you have to find someone that not only understands the technology, but is interested in the entrepreneurial life that we're doing here. So that's probably the biggest risk that you're starting with. The second thing I've seen quite a bit recently is profit margins that are almost hard to believe. And so when you look through the expenses, you realize that, you know, when a prospectus comes out from a broker, they're usually asking for about 1 year's worth of expenses. So what sellers do is they stop doing anything that doesn't keep the lights on expenses. So you can run a business for a year without like a CRM system and without tracking and all that stuff. But when you look at it and say, all right, this thing has a 95% profit margin. Well, of course, like all it's doing is paying for hosting and it's just coasting along. Just kind of realistically say, hey, there's a lot of stuff I'm going to have to add back in here that they have taken out. But you can take that out of the multiple and say, listen, you have it priced at this, but there's a $50,000 a year expense thing that you know should be in here. So those are the two that, for me, I always go in assuming those are both true.
Yeah. Or, the owners haven't taken a paycheck in 6 months all of a sudden,
Right.
You look at something I have to look at is payroll. It's like, okay, that kind of 20 people and it's only this amount. What's going on?
And you can use that to your advantage too, where you look at something and they're paying that payroll and you say, okay, well, I'm getting a salary from a different company. So I don't even need to pay myself that. So then it kind of switches from W-2, actually into dividends
like
And so sometimes you just can't get anything out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And so you can also look at it where as the owner, it's more advantageous for you, where the seller might be in a different spot, And so it can kind of go both ways where, there's different ways to look at it where sometimes we're looking for the negatives, but there are some positives that can come out of it as well.
Yeah, I agree. There's sometimes I was looking due diligence. I'm like, okay, there's three expensive cars on the...
Yeah, so you can take that right out, which is nice.
So boom, those are the things that you look at, right? As far as the due diligence. So
it always frustrates me because I look at it as a buyer and I say, man, if you had called me as a seller and we just had a 1 hour conversation, I would have said, you need to take this stuff out because you'll get a better price, like drop the cars. Yeah. So maybe someday I should just be a consultant on the selling side.
Yeah,
because here's what buyers are looking for.
A little less headache, a little... Some of the people that I've known that have sold their e-commerce sites the old owner stayed on for like 6 months. Is that something that you do, or do you sit there and say, nope, you guys are gone, I don't need you?
Well, we definitely want to keep the prior owner or owners on for a period of time during the transition, because there's always going to be questions that maybe don't show up every 30 days, but they show up once a quarter, or an expense shows up a year later and you're asking what it is. So hopefully that they're still available. I've never had a situation where the owner continued to run it for 6 months. I have seen those situations where you have like an earnout or, there's a million different ways to describe that, some type of performance bonus. And that gets tricky because the seller knows, well, if I'm not in control of the business, how do I control the performance? So for me, it has not happened. It is common in the industry. And there's definitely people I could refer you or your listeners to help you with, thinking some of those challenges out.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, what are some of the things that I'm missing? This is a very interesting topic that I'm sure, I don't want to miss anything. Is there anything else that you'd like to let our listeners know?
I think one of the things that we as engineers we default a lot towards the real estate side of doing investing to try and diversify what we're up to. We say there's three pillars to making wealth, right? It's going to be real estate, it's going to be equities and bonds, and it's going to be owning a business. And so this is, my attempt to talk about this is a little bit to help people recognize more on the business ownership side, because we do kind of concentrate so much on the real estate. So whether it's kind of looking at the Web Street thing where you can kind of do a small piece of this and kind of buy along with me, or kind of like you suggested, do 10, 20 hours a week on your own side online business. It doesn't have to be putting food on the table, but it does all of your discretionary income. So for me, the thing that I just kind of really want to highlight is how much flexibility that can give you, and not to forget about this wealth creation pillar.
Yeah, it is very important. One of the things I always say is like, look, you can make a lot of money, work for someone else, but do you have a life? You know, and the transition for me, and I'm sure you agree, is like, I can eventually get there doing my side hustle and it becomes a full-time, but now I dictate and I determine, and now I have a job that I can do anywhere in the world, and I don't need to take a vacation from my job because I love my job now, right?
Right. Yeah, it's a weird thought. Like, vacations to me are work because I really like what I'm doing. But like I said way in the beginning, I enjoyed my 18-year career, but had I known about this option, I might have at about, year 10 started working on this, moving myself out so that I was in control of my life a little earlier. So yeah, if people hear this and kind of are like, that doesn't sound like a bad idea. Doing the corporate thing is good for a while, but having that plan to leave, I just didn't have it until I came across this.
Sure. And so many people, that's all the IT companies, e-commerce people, most, I'd say most, if not all of the owners of all of these new companies were employees of a prior company. They're just building upon their successes. It's like, why am I making someone else money when I do the exact same thing, make my take myself?
It's the same projects you're working on in the office. It's just you get to take all the benefit.
Absolutely. Michael, where can people find you if they're interested in getting to know you?
So I've got my own site there. It's michaelfrew.com. I've put up a landing page for just this podcast. So that's going to be at forwardtrg. I'll put the video course on there, the newsletter sign up, a link out to that web street if you're looking at doing some passive investing in the same thing. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm /Michael Frew. Not a lot of Frews out there in the world, so that helps me out quite a bit. And just reach out to me anywhere there. I'm just always trying to help people. And so reach out and ask some questions and let me know where you found me so I can give some credit back here.
Sounds great. Michael, it's been a pleasure. And thank you for not selling anything, but just wanting to grow and reach out and educate people that were doing the exact same thing that you were doing. Thank you so much for coming on the Richer Geek podcast.
Been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the Richer Geek podcast, where we're helping others find creative ways to build wealth and financial freedom. For today's show notes, including all the links and resources from our show and more information about our guests, visit us at www.therichergeek.com/podcast. And don't forget to jump over to Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts and hit the subscribe button. Share with others who could benefit from listening. And leave a rating and review to get the podcast in front of more eyes. I appreciate you, and thanks for listening.